At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
Moncrief on News Talk.
You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. Joanna Fortune joins us once again for our parenting slot. Afternoon, Joanna.
Afternoon, Sean.
Our 3-year-old has taken to sticking her tongue out and blowing whenever she doesn't like something. We may think she may have picked up this behaviour in Montessori, but it is upsetting us because it seems so rude. She does it to us and her little sister too. We feel it may be a product of her inability to articulate her feelings, but is there a way we can channel this energy in a different way? I've told her that it's bold to do this, but she doesn't seem to care.
No, of course she doesn't. Mm. You know, that wouldn't interest her at all. She doesn't even really know what that means. So, look, I think this parent, you're right. This is a very specific behaviour that your child is using to convey a feeling of frustration, most likely, or displeasure in whatever's going on. And she cannot otherwise articulate that because she's 3, and this is super effective. You know, it's a quick action and everyone knows what she's thinking and feeling in it. So, look, you don't like it is the point. The fact that she's doing it, she's 3 years old. She may well have picked it up in Montessori. She may have seen it somewhere. It could have come from anywhere, by the way. Mm. We're very quick to kind of go, it's other people's kids who make our kids
do things. Of course it is, yeah.
But actually being 3 can be enough in and of itself. But go to distraction and redirection here. You know, sure, you might want to say with a serious but not cross voice, and that doesn't need to be a fine line, okay? So you're not laughing or smiling when you say it, but you're not like furrowed brow and scolding either. So a serious but not cross expression. Say something like, I don't like that. Please stop. Okay, that's it. A few words, leave it at that. And then you might want to reframe it into, you're giving me a thumbs down to tell me you don't want this or you don't like this. And by repeating that and being consistent, she's hearing that thumbs down is an alternative expression
to
the thing you don't like. So you're actually modeling and put that, do your own thumbs down when you're saying that. You're saying, I don't like it. Thumbs down. Repeat that and give her an alternative expression. But I think that's way easier than that's bold. Stop it. That's just not going to land on a 3-year-old.
Yeah. I imagine if she's actually blowing raspberries, she must have got a smile or two at some point.
Oh, no doubt. The first couple of times it was kind of endearing and cute. And oh, that's new. Where did she get that? So cheeky. But then sassy becomes irritating and you're like, now I'd like you to stop. But she's like, but it's funny. Give her an alternative way and help her to begin to build a language, an expression that's going to allow her to convey those feelings.
Yeah. It's funny the way 3-year-olds are kind of like, it's their equivalent of a dad joke. You know, like, men get to a point where they just flog a joke to death and keep repeating it.
That's an analogy I hadn't considered before, but
So think of him as your father. I'm worried that we have allowed our son to take advantage too much of our gentle parenting style. He's 10 and dictates everything. Even where he wants to go at weekends, etc., he knows I find it hard to say no to him. He has no problem embarrassing us with regular meltdowns either. I try to be less reactive, but I am concerned that he's walking all over us and it's too late to get him to change.
Ah, but it's not too late to get you to change. Mm. Because I think that's what I want you to look at here, not how do you get him to change. The change is going to start with you guys and then he's going to kick and scream. No, he's going to adjust gradually to the change. Just to kind of call out something in this, though, because this comes up quite a bit. There's these kinds of schools of parenting, you know, parenting philosophies, they emerge. There's, you know, it could be gentle parenting, it could be free range parenting, it could be helicopter parenting, it could be anything, right? But sometimes when we take them and go, oh, I like the sound of that, I'm going to be that parent. If we haven't really integrated how that style of parenting aligns with who we are as people, it can feel like you're performing parenting rather than authentically doing it. And you may not be understanding the sort of philosophy of the parenting method in question. So like anyone listening, gentle parenting, what is it? I mean, gentle parenting, what it doesn't mean is an absence of boundaries. And this is a common misconception with this type of parenting. You need boundaries, you need limit setting. Okay, and this is what's missing here for your son. You're saying that he's deciding where you all go at weekends at 10 years old. Like, that's way too much power to give a 10-year-old child. He'll take it, by the way. He's dictating everything, but it's not reassuring for him. It doesn't make him feel good. Boundaries help us to feel safe. It communicate. We internalize them as limits, and we know there's somebody that is going to stop us and the situation from getting out of control. No child's going to thank you for that, by the way, but it does provide reassurance, co-regulation, and that inner state felt safety. It allows us to feel safe from the inside out. So it's really important. Also, though, gentle parenting does not mean no discipline. It doesn't mean that. You know, really with gentle parenting, rather than focusing on punishment and rewards and consequences, that style of discipline, it's really about shifting the focus to, you know, increasing your child's awareness of their behavior and the effect that behavior has on others. Yeah. That's really what it is. It's more reflective, and that you engage in relational repair. That didn't go so well. Our feelings got loud. We yelled at each other. I really wish that hadn't happened. If I did do over, I would say it this way to you instead. And you're modeling that for them, that they take their cues from you. Setting clear boundaries, highlighting what you are asking of your child, young child, he's still only 10, and focusing on the action you want to see. That's really what you have to do with it. So, oh, you know, we're going to do this, and here you're going to do. And if he says, I'm not doing it, oh, you'd rather do something else. But actually today, here's what we're doing. But when we get there, you can choose A or B. Okay, so we're going to the park. Do you want to bring your scooter or your bike?
Yeah.
That's your choice. But the scaffolding is there. The structure and the boundary is there by the parents. And I honestly think, Sean, this is one of the reasons that gentle parenting can fail. It's actually when you over-accommodate a child's emotions without any guidance, modelling, boundaries with it. You can't just do one without that balance. So you focus on the emotions and you're guiding, modelling within boundaries as well. And that's how it works. So I think you might think you're doing gentle parenting, but it's sounding a little permissive.
Yes,
and it's sounding a little passive. And I think that's where this has gone awry. So with your gentle parenting, you're going to focus on connection, communication and consistency. And that's not what's happening at the moment. So what I'm going to say is you might need a little bit of support beyond reading a book on this, beyond doing something else. You might benefit from linking with somebody who can do some therapeutic or psychoeducation around parenting and just help you really identify what mode of parenting does really suit you and align with who you are as a person or as people. And then you can look at how do you put the boundaries in place now that you've a 10-year-old. It is, you say it's too late to get him to change. It is not too late.
God, no.
It's absolutely not too late. But I would like you to start putting boundaries in place before he hits adolescence, because in early adolescence, part of his developmental task is to test boundaries, push limits, and, you know, to seek more autonomy from you. So you've got to put boundaries in place before that developmental phase happens.
Jesus, Lisa says, bravo, Joanna. Your explanation of adopting an authentic parenting style is so spot on and something many parents don't understand they need to do. Is it also kind of the case that in the way one parents, it has to kind of search your personality?
Oh, yeah, but it also, like, in our not so fine moments, Sean, of parenting, and I'm sure we've both had one or two of those along the way, it's not what you've read in a book or watched on a webinar that's going to pop out your mouth. It's what you lived. So it's, and again, this isn't about blaming your own parents. It's how you experienced being parented, what processing you've done around that, you know, the meaning you've made around that. That's what's going to inform how you parent. And often, like, I think we like to think, oh, there's a school of parenting I can just adopt and do and that'll keep me on the straight and narrow. It's much more nuanced than that. You're probably going to be doing some hybrid version of multiple modalities that have to be authentic, because otherwise your child will see through it anyway. They'll be like, oh, you're doing that parenting thing again, are you?
Yeah.
It has to be real.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose in some way, shape or form, you have to be able to say no.
It's how you do it.
But
we all need no's, and we all need people in our lives who will call us out on stuff and say, hey, that's too far. You need to row back on that. You need to make repair. You need to apologize. You know, you have to take accountability. That's good life lessons, no matter what school of parenting. How you do it is what changes, not if you do it.
Our 14-year-old son is in a rock band with some of his friends. They have had a few daytime gigs in the community hall, and we have supported him as he's really passionate about it. My concern is how his passion translates to his lifestyle choices. He has started wearing all black clothing, wearing jewellery with skulls on it, and always looking sloppy and unkempt. Even when we go to mass, he looks like something we have dragged out from under a rock. How do we get him to look respectable without dashing his passion for music?
How do we change him without changing him? I mean, isn't it brilliant? He's 14, he's in a band with his friends, he's got that community connection, and you're supporting him. But you know what? He's letting you support him.
Yeah.
I think that's extra good. It's not just you going, hey, we're cheerleaders to your band, and he's going, please don't come. He's happy to have you there and express himself in this way. He's at a stage of development where, you know, experimenting with that adjustment of estrangement, you know, new music, new friends, new styles of clothing, all of that to experiment with who he is apart from you guys is there. And look, he is going to mass with you. He's not saying he's not going.
Yeah, he's 14
as well. You have a lot of wins going on here. So all of that to say, I'm going to ask you to sit down and really reflect on this and identify how big a deal it is for you before you approach it with him.
Yeah.
Like, are you happy you've got a 14-year-old who's engaged, he has friends, he's active, he has a hobby, he's interested, he involves you in his interests, he still goes to mass with the family? Is it okay that that's enough and it doesn't matter what he's wearing? And if you're listening going, no, Joanne, it really does matter, really does, then we're into that realm of identifying this as a parental essential versus a parental preference. It is reading to me like a preference.
Yeah.
You prefer him to dress a certain way to go to mass. Especially with teenagers, but parenting in general, with our parental preferences, we've wiggle room. That's where we can negotiate, we can be flexible, we can be adaptable. Our parental essentials, we cannot. So if you're saying, no, I'm sorry, it is an essential, then I would look at the art of compromise here and just say to him, don't wear black clothes. But you might be saying, can you wear clothes that don't have rips in them? They can be black, but maybe it could be a t-shirt with no motif on it and maybe one piece of jewellery, not four pieces or whatever. It sounds very arbitrary when I'm saying it, but, you know, whatever works for you and your son. So don't get into, you're dressed inappropriately, this isn't going to work, because you'll get into critical mode and that will put him into a defensive response mode with you. But instead say, look, it's mass, a black shirt, a black t-shirt, one piece of jewellery, and then wear what you like when we get home. And just approach it in an amenable way to elicit an amenable response. But this is his style. It's part of emerging independence. It's his sense of self that's evolving and developing. I would definitely pick your battles. And if you can say, look, I don't love it, but I can live with it, I'd leave it alone.
Yeah. And I know the way they put it, the music first, and now he started dressing this way. But I doubt if they said, no more band, he'd go, okay, grand, can I have a pair of Wranglers, please?
Absolutely.
You know,
Wranglers.
he'd be staying, and as a few people are saying, at least he's still going to mass. I'm a mother to two little girls, aged 5 and 3. My daughters cling to me all the time, whether we're at home, in their granny's house, or even at a playground with other kids. They constantly want to sit on my lap together, hang off my leg, or be held. Since my eldest daughter started school in September, her clinginess has become much more obvious, especially when I see other children of the same age. Recently, my friend remarked that it was my own doing. She suggested I let the girls play on their own more, and I shouldn't always feel the need to organise play activities for them. My friend's children are of a similar age, and they are quite independent. How do I make them less clingy?
This is a bit like the three-year-old blowing raspberries, that, you know, the change is going to start with the parent, not the child. We won't make them less clingy, but there's something in this, you know, it sounds like this parent or their friend actually are identifying the parent's possible, dare I say, micromanaging approach as a variable here. So you could call it helicoptering, but you know, that kind of, okay, you're going to play, here's the activity, here's how to do it, that very, like you're a director in their play. And really at their age, they're well able to do bursts of independent play. Now manage your expectations. They're still going to call you in and want you there. And it's lovely that our children want us to play with them, because when our children say, you know, will you play with me, really what they're saying is, will you connect with me? And I think the day they stop asking us, that's when we're like, oh, we have to find another way of making sure we stay connected. So rather than kind of focus on changing them, let's start with what changes you can make first. Start small and build up. So if you've been very much directing their play, don't just take your hands off the wheel abruptly and say, you're on your own, kids, you know, because they literally won't know what to do with that. But start playing with them, then leave them to it. Walk away, tell them you've a little job to do, you've a task to do, potter around for 15, 20 minutes, maybe just with your eyes now, don't come back into the room, just check they're okay and leave them at it. And then if they need you, come in, reorganize them and step out again so that you are giving them that space. Encourage independence. You have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old. You can give them each some chores. You know, they can bring their laundry down to the basket, straighten their duvets. They could bring their dishes over to the dishwasher, whatever it is. But you could give them little jobs because it helps them go, ooh, look at all I'm capable of doing.
Yeah.
And gives you something to praise. Always focus with your praise on effort over outcome and encourage their ideas. If they're saying, what'll we play or what'll we do? Say, what do you think? And oh, you've such great ideas, and reinforce that. So I do, because it does seem a bit extreme, Sean, when you're saying a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old are clinging to you all the time, even in a playground where there are other children.
Yeah, yeah.
So I do think you need to just gradually and then increasingly step yourself away and give them more space, freedom of expression. And you're still going to be there and they're still going to want to play with you. But you want them to want to be with you rather than to need to be on you all the time.
Yeah. Kieran says, going back to the 14-year-old in the band, myself and my friends were those kids who dressed in black and hung out by the steps in Temple Bar with all the goths. Fast forward 20 years and we're all grown up professionals. It's not the end of the world. God, I hope the 14-year-old isn't listening to this. He'd be horrified.
Yeah.
Joanna, thanks a million.
Thanks,
as ever.
John.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.